So, guys, you know, there's a lot of people that obviously know who you are, but I like to dig in on your story and how you got to where you are outside of just, you know, who's on, you know, the two guys that are butchering on YouTube. But where did you guys grow up?
Sure. So North Central Ohio, little town called Creston.
Okay.
Greater Cleveland area. We're about 40 miles south of Cleveland.
Okay.
So Cleveland's in the nearest large city. Akron would be a little closer. North Central Ohio.
Very rural America. Wayne County, where we live, the largest dairy county in the state.
Wow.
So a lot of agriculture, a lot of animals to get a hold of. So, you know, finding things to butcher has never been a concern for us.
Yeah. Yeah. So I got to ask you, Cleveland Indians fans?
They're certainly. Yes. And I'm glad you said Indians.
Well, I figured that you would get where I was going with that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. It's a shame. Iconic franchise. I'll tell you this. You may remember this from 2007. But there was a pitcher that we had with the Yankees. His name was Jabba Chamberlain. And there were these bugs that hatched
The Mayflies or whatever they're called.
Yeah. So my moment of fame is I was the guy that ran out all the bug spray.
Nice.
Yeah. Just putting it out there. But that was a great Cleveland moment.
So being Indians fans, I do have to tell you that Chapman is still my favorite pitcher. My wife hates to hear me say that, but
okay.
Chapman, I mean, you can't beat it. The guy's awesome.
Yeah, he's been struggling as of late. So let's see what happens. But you know, this time of year is a funny year. Guys get a little bit tired, but September's when it really starts to matter, and you start to see those teams elevate or fall back. You know.
Yep. But we probably shouldn't talk about the Cleveland Browns at all.
No, we're not going to go there.
We're not going to go there.
Yeah, that's, you know, I will say this. That's a joke here in the Northeast when it comes to, you know, a woman that has a great body and a face that's so-so. We say, hey, she's like the Cleveland Browns, right? Good uni, bad helmet. So, you know, you guys may not have heard that before, but I'll figure out throw it out there.
For that one. We have a couple of customers in the Browns, so we better be cautious.
That's right. They shop frequently with us.
Yeah, so we can't
We are fans,
but it's definitely a struggle.
It's like New Yorkers that are Bills fans. You know, it's like a team that just, you want them to win, but they never do. But the fans are still really loyal. In baseball, it's like the Mets, same kind of deal. Although this year they're doing all right. But did you guys grow up in the butchering business?
Yeah, sort of. And really anybody that, you know, kind of grows up on a farm around here might have encountered on-farm butchering at some point in their younger days. The way that we started butchering, I was commercially when I was 12 and Seth was 14. So that was when our father actually acquired the business that we own now.
Okay.
It was an established arbitrator, so basically that's a fancy word for slaughterhouse. It was an established slaughterhouse that he was using to get his buffalo slaughtered at.
Okay.
He was raising the American bison buffalo and in the late 80s, early 90s, and using the slaughterhouse that we own now to get the animals butchered. And in 1994, he bought the slaughterhouse. And so that's when just kind of by default, we became involved in the commercial butcher business.
Yeah, because I feel like here, like in the Northeast, it's very, it's like lineage. It's like, well, my father was a butcher and my grandfather was a butcher, so I'm a butcher. You're not seeing, well, you're probably seeing a little bit more now, maybe again, because of content like yours that's out there, folks getting into the art of butchery. But prior to now, it's been a pretty like, almost like a dying industry. Like here, we're in upstate New York. You got a bunch of dairy farms, bunch of farms in general. And the hardest thing to find is a butcher.
Sure. It is. It's a very dying trade. So, yeah. we're fortunate to grow up in it. And we were taught by, you know, our grandfather had some butchery skills, our father did. And then we worked alongside a lot of old school butchers inside our shop that we learned from. You know, we didn't go to any butchering schools or, you know, vocational schools or anything like that to learn. We pretty much just learned through the old school guys or, you know, stuff that was self-taught. Yeah. But that's, you know, that's one of the reasons why we kicked off the YouTube channel, because it is a dying trade and there's a need in America for butchers. Yeah. Because, you know, if those go away, what are your options? I mean, you learn to do it yourself.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. It's a, was this something that you wanted to do, or you just kind of fell into it? Like, you guys, you know, you're in high school. Maybe did you want to do anything else? Was there another trade or another profession that you wanted to get into?
Our father was a drill sergeant in Vietnam, so he served in 173rd Airborne. And we weren't given a choice.
All right. You're in the business. Deal with it.
That's right. Put your head down, quit thinking, and do your job. That's what we were taught.
Okay.
So yeah, there was a few years where, you know, as young adults, it's like, you know, maybe we'll go, you know, maybe we'll, maybe this is not what we want to do. But looking back now, I'm glad that we never made a pivot.
All roads lead home for us. You know, growing up on the farm, the butcher shop was located on the farm. We're a farm family, and we, you know, and things for us financially weren't always that great. And yeah. So we knew we had to stick together as a team if we were going to succeed. So and that's one thing our father taught us really well, you know, how to work together as a team. We had our, you know, our arguments and our, you know, squabbles and things like that. But we knew at the end of the day, we were in this for the long haul, you know, for the future generation. So.
Yeah, no, I love the core value of family. I think it's, you know, that's a dying thing too today.
Certainly,
you know, people putting an importance on that, right? Everybody today's chasing business, chasing money, chasing what's next, and then they forget about, you know, that core.
Yep, certainly. So yeah, and that's, you know, with us, you know, being, you know, entrepreneurs and business owners, now we have our own kids coming on, you know, into the scene, so. We have to remember too that, which is, it's great because we get to bring them, you know, along with us. So yeah. now they're learning the trade, but sometimes we do, you know, as entrepreneurs, we do have to remember that we have to take a step back and, you know, we're parents too. We can kind of get caught up in the business scene sometimes, forget that, but yeah.
Yeah. How do you balance, that's actually a question I had for you, is how do you balance the, let's say, the art of butchery, the media side of what you do, and then the business side of all of it?
Great question. So we describe our business really as three pillars. So okay. Pillar one is our family butcher shop. So it lends a lot of authenticity. You know, we have all of our trade there and years and years of experience. So it's a brick and mortar operation. You can walk in there. You're going to, you know, we've been an establishment of the community for close to 30 years now. So you're going to have a lot of those feels. So, you know, brick and mortar, definitely like, sort of that's where the roots are. And then pillar two is our e-commerce, okay. Which is basically our direct to consumer, sale of, spices, sauces, apparel, kind of butchering accessories, grilling accessories. And then pillar three is the media side of things.
Okay.
So frankly, it is a bit of a juggling act because, on the butcher side of things, we're heavily involved, in the sense that, you know, we're either doing the butchering ourselves or training butchers, which that can be a years long process, depending on who you're starting with. We are seeing a resurgence in interest in the trade, which is great. We get messages daily that talk about, you know, I'm starting up a butcher shop based because, you know, what you guys are doing. But so that takes a lot of our time. Now, yeah. Pillar two, I'm happy to say we have a great team and we essentially have, the e-commerce, the fulfillment, which we do all in-house.
Cool.
Is pretty much hands off for us. And then we work on the media side, which the great thing about that is it's a sales funnel to help bring in sales to the e-commerce, which is, you know, the broader reach,
yeah,
more scalable, but also the brick and mortar store. We get people that travel from states away to come see the home of the bearded butchers. But the biggest thing is, you know, requests to travel, those sort of things. Those have definitely taken an uptick in recent years.
Well, that's what I was thinking, like, again, the more notoriety you get, as YouTubers and, media personalities digitally, the more requests come in. Hey, can you come here? Can you come do this? So it takes you away from those three pillars in a way. Yeah. And it takes you away from the family.
Yeah.
It's like, how do you keep all of that working in synergy and moving, in the direction that you want? Because it's easy to get pulled off course.
It is. We have to filter those. So you've probably been in contact with Caitlin quite a bit. Mm. She's kind of our brand mom, we call her.
Okay, so that's good.
She filters through, and we're very selective with, where our time goes. That's just something we have to do, because usually, like you said, it's either taking away from our brick and mortar or our family, one or the other. But
yeah, you get these three engines working, you got to make sure that they're working efficiently.
We do have a sincere appreciation for what we would consider our customer and, fan base, because you're literally helping put shoes on our children's feet. So, a certain part of that is, this is our job, and it pays our bills. And so we're happy to do it. And we're happy for, all the interest that it's brought our way. It's a real blessing.
Okay, so I have a question for you. So you have all these people reaching out. They want butcher. They want to maybe become butchers. How do you stay focused again on those three, as opposed to saying, we could add a fourth. Let's come up with a bearded butchery school or certification or something like that.
These are always
whiteboard items.
Okay.
I think that as we continue to grow now, if we look at whether it's a two or 5-year plan or 10-year plan, obviously a lot of the energy that we have, the bandwidth we have, we're putting into, the butchers that we have that are working alongside of us, as well as our own next generation.
Mm.
We're learning a lot by, just osmosis. They're around. But to your point about the knowledge piece, there's a big demand for it. There's a lot of, in fact, we are now seeing where, there's quite a bit of government aid in the form of funding pumped into what they would consider our supply system. So we have butchers kind of popping up left and right. As Seth mentioned, a lot of that sort of it does live on on YouTube for free. But it's always been sort of one of the line items to build out a course, an online course, likely something that's, behind a paywall so that people pay for the course.
Yeah.
We've trained competitors. We know that. But frankly, it's kind of like it's like the SpaceX thing, or a Tesla rather, here's our patents. If you can make a better electric car than us, then we've got a number of like personalities that have kind of popped up.
Yeah.
Most of them, bravo, good for you. Like to see the trade really, get some, young blood in it. That's if you don't go anywhere near our trademarks and things like that. Like I said, bravo. There's plenty of room for all of us, keep it up. But it's just interesting as we've grown, we've had to fend off, a few legal things with just regard to like when we entered the scene, just with regard to butchering, the internet was pretty much just wide open.
Yeah.
And we got a lot of traction early because Google began to look at us as the authority for all things butchering.
Cool.
So they would just show if Dana's getting on YouTube and he's searching, where does a ribeye come from or whatever, Google's going to be like, I'm going to show him the Beard of Butcher stuff because they are the leading authority. So we got a leg up early and fed into the algorithm really well, which it helped us out a lot. But then and that was been like 2018, 2019. But then, we started to see after a year or two, similar logos being created, people adding, one or two syllables to the name and things like that. So that that stuff is going to come with some heat. We're going to get on it right away. We have a legal team for that stuff.
Yeah.
But the online course type stuff, let's get more young blood in the industry. That we're all about that. We want to see you carve out your niche and do your thing, you know?
Yeah. No, it's important. It's important to have, you know, especially if you're in an agricultural community. Mm-hmm. You know, you need it. Like for us, it's a need. It's not just a want, it's a need. You know, as you go downstate in New York to New York City and Brooklyn, that's where you're seeing a lot more craft sort of butchery coming into play. But that's cool too. Who made the decision to go start filming and then to start putting it out on the internet?
Well, that really came just by we had, you know, a lot of entrepreneurs share a lot of the same, you know, as you grow and learn, you realize that people have a lot of discipline. They get up early in the morning. They do a lot of the same things that we do. Yep. And so we were, you know, this is when smartphones were, you know, relatively new. And we were watching people like Gary Vaynerchuk or, you know, Grant Cardone or those type of people. And it's like, I distinctly remember Gary Vaynerchuk saying that, you know, don't create content, just document it.
Yeah.
And just turn that phone around. And if the audience likes it, it will be received and it'll grow. So we took that philosophy and I distinctly recall it was 2016 and we had, actually a deer that we were going to butcher. And it's laid out on the table. And so I literally just got my phone out and I was like, let's just do a Facebook Live. And it was one take. It was horrible audio. I didn't even have my phone horizontal. It was vertical the whole time.
Mm.
And we put it on. It was live, so it uploaded to Facebook.
Yeah.
And it went. It was like October of 2016, and we did have a YouTube channel at the time. It had one video on it, and it had been sitting there since like March. It
had like five followers.
Yeah. So we had a YouTube channel, but it hadn't nothing going. Well, in October, month and a half goes by, and you know, figure it's deer season. Seth's like, hey, did you see that video on YouTube, on Facebook went to like 500,000 views? I was like, no. He's like, yeah, it's getting shared all over the place. And I was like, wow. So he took the same video and just downloaded it and then put it on YouTube. Well, of course, it was in vertical format versus horizontal, so it had the black lines.
Yeah.
Blurry. You can still go watch it. Audio's poor. And it did the same thing on YouTube. So it's like, well, we might have something here. So we started with the phones, just literally one take. We learned to turn the dark horizontal.
Right?
But,
yeah.
and then, you know, maybe 6 months, a year goes by and we had dabbled a little bit and just kind of like hiring local cameramen and it was like schedules and stuff like that. So the phone was working out best for us. And then our older brother, Sean, who's a member of the business too, his young son, who was 16 or 17 at the time, had an interest in filmmaking. And he's like, hey guys, I'm going to buy some equipment. One of the first things, he's like, we got to get your audio fixed up. He's like, people don't want to try to listen hard when they're watching a video. So his name's Spencer. He's still our media guy. And really when two things happened, Spencer began to do all of our filming and editing. And then we had another local guy that solicited us in sort of a way for SEO and keyword stuff.
Okay.
And we had been getting a lot of that. The channel was kind of starting to grow and we just kind of blew it off. And then he's our COO now. And
cool.
he still handles all that stuff. But those two kind of came together in the perfect timing. So we had, you know, Google was recognized as the leading authority. We got the keyword keyword and the SEO stuff in line, and then we got better video and audio. And that all started to gel together in like 2019. And then it just started to take off from there. So I would say it was just kind of a joint decision, just we had smartphones, it's free platforms. Let's see what we can do with them.
Yeah, just keep going.
And we knew that people, obviously they want to see what we were producing. So we just continued to create organic, natural, you know, content that was watchable, because the videos that we'd upload, every video would always outdo the previous one and just get better and better. So we just stay very real. We're very open and honest and pretty direct, you know, just with our content, and it's very well received.
Yeah.
What you see in a video is what you're going to get if you pop in the store and, you know, say hi to us on a daily basis. We just film it.
Cool. No, that's cool. Yeah. It's, you know, you're showing people what goes on. Cause the truth is, how many people have actually ever been into a butcher shop?
Right. Well, for certain. And like you mentioned, you know, it was kind of a dying trade. So, you know, a lot of people, maybe one generation already started to be removed from it, but now we're seeing a resurgence. So it's going to come back, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's cool. A lot of younger people seem to be interested in, you know, when you look at YouTube, you know, that farming, they're interested in, you know, butchery. It's, you know, it's a big deal. Like the folks that we use, they're in their early 30s. They just took over a shop from a 70-year-old gentleman who's run it for 50 years.
See, and it jumped a generation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah. Good point. Good point.
We caught it. I think we kind of caught it just in time before it actually went right into the, you know, into the gutter.
And you mentioned the, you know, your craft butcheries in Brooklyn and New York City and things like that. Those butcher shops still require somebody like us on our end, actually, you know, butchering the animal. So if you don't have somebody actually taking the animal off of a trailer, harvesting that animal, hanging in a cooler, and then delivering it to that facility, they don't have anything. They don't have work. So somebody still has to do the dirty work on the back end.
Yeah. And that's work. You don't see. I was going to say, that's the work you don't see. It's
hard work too. Yep. You know, it's not an easy job. Most butchers don't get paid well, even though it's a very important, you know, important job. So we feel like, We definitely love the feeling of knowing that, you know, in America and maybe even around the world, we're helping the industry, you know, kind of have a comeback.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, most people think they get, you know, meat and food comes from the grocery store.
Yeah. Right.
And then they complain about, some of them complain about that the pricing of meat is a little bit high, but.
Oh, for sure.
Again, it's like.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. First time you hand somebody a knife scabbard and there's an animal standing in a pasture and you tell them to go put it in the cooler, I guarantee if they attempted it, they wouldn't complain about meat prices after they did it.
Yeah. Yep. But, I always say, I have people, you know, talk about the price of pork. I'm like, I don't know how they charge so cheap in a store. Cause I mean, listen, you know, when you take a hog out, I know for us, sometimes you're dragging a 200-300 pounder.
Yeah. Sure. And then the farming industry as a whole, you know, none of it's real easy. It's all hard work. So
it's all hard work. It's true. Yeah, we picked up two cows this morning, and it's, you know, it's labor.
Yeah. And then, you know, and you have the farmer that's out there pulling a calf at midnight on New Year's Eve or, you know, Christmas morning, or, you know, has a calf freezing to the ground in the wintertime. And there's just, it's a lot of hard work. So, you know, educating the consumer through this whole thing is, you know, from start to finish is definitely one of our goals.
You know, I want to get your thought on this though, too. What are your thoughts on also like even educating some of the farmers? Because I have found, again, I'm a bit younger than a lot of the farmers around here, and they think the same way they did 30 years ago, even in regards to pricing and everything else. You know, I think there's a lot of value in what you provide to even just the old school farmer or someone that says, you know, has been doing it a while and they get a chance to take a look at what you guys do.
That's a hard one to crack. You know, our father, he was in that generation. So as we went through our business, you know, we had these growth spurts and we made pivots and stuff. Sometimes it wasn't easy for him to see, you know, our vision, with how future was changing and, you know, technology and things like that. So I mean, some of them, they say you can't teach an old dog new tricks. So some of them, they may not ever get it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just what it is. So
it kind of is.
Hey, I got a personal question for you, for both of you guys. Have you always had the beards, or was that just, you know, something that you added later?
I grew a beard when I was 25, 40 now. So I've had hair on my face for 15 years. Mm. It was the strangest thing. I never thought I would wear a beard when I was younger. you know, I shaved or whatever. Our father and our grandfather were both in the military. And when they got out of the military, they grew beards and they had beards all their lives. So we didn't really think much about it other than just, you know, it was just how we always knew them. And what it's really interesting how the actual name came around. It was 2011 and we had a couple of butchers that were working with us and we had a lot of, you know, great camaraderie. In fact, they're still part of our brand now. They learned that butchering was way too hard. So they actually work in the administrative side of the Beard of Butcher brand now. One is our product manager. One's our HR manager. But anyway, the beards, we were all working in the butcher shop. And this was in 2011 when beards were like really like a thing, like a fad.
Yeah.
So we were like, let's have a beard growing contest. Let's see who can grow the beard I had a beard. I think everybody else maybe had goatees. But anyway,
they had to catch up to you.
They did. So
he can't change the color of his though. His will always be red until it turns white.
Oh, that's all right though. It makes it unique.
Yeah.
I agree. So we went about 6 months and we had this. We weren't trimming our mustache or anything. It was a mess. But anyway, I don't know how our wives put up with it. And and in the doing so, we started this facial hair club, this Northeast Ohio facial hair club. And we'd have official meetings and stuff. People started coming. We did kind of learn that some beard aficionados are wackos. So we traded off our club pretty quickly. We exited. But it was during that time that we had it. So we had a spice rub that we were using in the butcher shop. It was a recipe Seth had. He had formulated. I mean, with butchering, spices and butchering are going to go hand in hand. Mm-hmm. Now, a lot of butchers are going to use in good for them, but there's a lot of prepackaged pouches that you just put to a certain amount of meat. And there's bigger companies that produce that. It makes your work easier. But you know, historically, you're going to be measuring out different amounts. It almost always starts with salt of different spices. So we had experience blending spices. Seth made up a recipe that was it was just a dry rub that we would put on ribs and pork butts and things like that for our store. Didn't even have a name. So we're like, we got to figure out a way to brand it. We wanted a brand outreach or whatever. So we came up with a bearded butcher approved because people were calling us the bearded butchers because of all these beards that we had going on. So we made up a little sticker and we would stick it on the package that said bearded butcher approved. Well, one of the guy's wives came up with a caricature of our dad because he was bearded.
Okay.
And that's right there.
Yeah.
And we stuck it right on the package and it said bearded butcher approved. So if you bought that package with that spice, it was like, you know, our stamp of approval. And so that's kind of where it began. Cause then it was like, well, I want to buy just the spice. So we started putting it in little shakers, if you will. And then, got a label made and that was in 2012, right around there. And then when we were starting to get more media, forward with brand outreach, you know, what can we throw over the wall? We don't ship meats, but we can ship this spice. So in 2018, I built a website, you know, we had the original blend spice and, we had added different flavors because there's three brothers in the business. So we themed a different flavor of spice.
Okay, cool.
And, we kind of started out from there and the golden goose, if you will, is YouTube, because when somebody, and I've actually read about this where there's actually like a model, like if you can have a certain item to sell, that without even trying, we actually check that box, because if you watch our content, you're like, love these guys, wonder what I can buy from them. Mm. And then you find our website and we have like a little something that's $10 or whatever. You're like, I trust them. I like them. Let's try it out. So the YouTube drove our e-commerce platform off the ground.
Cool.
But by the way, we have a really great spice blend, a number of them and they're very popular, and they're we've got you know, what I would consider a fantastic customer base all around the world now, because you know, we've been able to ship it pretty much everywhere.
Yeah. Well, the interesting thing is the e-commerce business quickly overtook our brick and mortar butcher shop. That's something we didn't, you know, we never expected to happen as quick as it did.
Well, what's cool too is, you know, here you are, right? In small town, Ohio, and now you're known around the world, right? That's kind of cool. Your product, your butcher shop is actually a global shop in a way.
Exactly. Yeah. And if down the road we get into online sales of meat, you know, we have a sales funnel for it. And that's an opportunity that we can, a resource that we can tap into.
You know, I want to ask you about that. Just your thoughts on it. Does shipping the meat alter the meat? I mean, I know if that's in your future business plan, I don't want to kill it, but no, just a question.
It does not. So meat, if properly handled and packaged, it gets suspended in time. So what we do is, you know, we would take the animal, the livestock, and we have a process where you know, it's going to go into the coolers after a certain period of days, whether it's pork or beef, it's going to get processed. Now, when we process it, we vacuum seal it in a vacuum seal pouch. Mm-hmm. So all the air is removed, and then we have a process for flash freezing it. Okay. We don't flash freeze all of our meats, but if we're going to ship meats, you would do that. Now, what you've done then is you've just basically pushed the pause button on the freshness of that meat. So you put it in that package. If the package remains sealed, you flash freeze it. And when that goes from point A to point B, as long as it remains frozen, it's going to come out the other end at the exact same quality that it began with.
Okay. So
if properly handled and preserved, you will have absolutely no change in the quality.
Okay. I know people may have this question about refreezing meat. So I have the meat, I defrost it, and I say, ah, man, I'm not going to be able to have this tonight. I'm probably going to have it two nights from now. Can it be refrozen? And if so, what's the best way to do it?
Yep. So it can. Typically, the USDA recommendation is that it can be frozen twice.
Okay.
So it can be frozen initially, defrosted, and frozen a second time.
Okay.
If it's still in the package, that's even better.
Okay.
Now, here's what happens with frozen meat. Frozen meat is safe indefinitely. It will be as safe when you take it out of the freezer 20 years from now as it was the day you put it in, as long as it was frozen the whole time. What happens is freezers are extremely low humidity environments, and the meat will actually dehydrate. That's what freezer burn is.
Okay.
So when it turns white, it's dehydrated. So you will have the same safety, but the quality will begin to deteriorate. So if packaged, that's best. Go ahead and put it back in the freezer, freeze it to another time. Now, that's if you haven't had it in your refrigerator for a month.
Right.
You know, because with meat, you're essentially controlling a process of the meat breaking down.
Mm.
Now, if it's done properly, you can enhance. Just like that's what dry aging is. So dry aging is like aging wine. You have to have certain parameters that you're in, because what you're going to do is you're going to evaporate moisture, and that's going to concentrate your flavor. And then you're going to have the enzymes start to break down the meat and becomes more tender. But that's a natural process of decomposing that you're just controlling, and you're doing it in a very very careful manner. But that is meat's nature to decompose. You have time temperature involved there. So but yeah, to answer your question, you can certainly refreeze meat.
You know I ask it because, you know, I think to many, meat is still a mystery. There's like these mysterious things around meat, and then you have the whole camp that's, you know, meat is bad, like meat is just stay away.
Yep.
It's gonna kill you. You know, and that's a whole nother group. Actually, which I wanted to ask about that. You know, you're butchering, and there's a group of people that don't like butchers and butchering and animal, you know, harvesting. How have you dealt with that? Because I'm sure you've gotten some critics, right?
We do. Now, I will say this. We try, and Seth talked about the transparency and the authenticity. What you see is what we are. We've actually, I would say we've gotten more positive feedback from vegans than we have negative.
Cool.
And I think the reason is that we're so transparent, and we show how our processors, how our processes work. And when you can speak to, you know, in a truthful manner to what you're doing, there's some respect that just can't be denied there.
Yeah.
And so what we've seen is we've seen vegans comment on our channel and say, you know, I don't eat meat, but I would support somebody that, you know, talks about the animals this way, treats the animals this way. So we have what, you know, is the federal USDA oversight for our slaughter operation. And so the biggest thing is, you know, and you'll ask people, or I've asked people, you know, that don't eat meat, you know, is it a health choice? You know, it could become, you know, there's certain fads that come along. I think there's plenty of information out there that debunks that, you know, a meat-free diet is best for most people. I think most people thrive on a high animal rich diet. But, you know, if it's a choice or something you're trying, whatever, but if it's something ethically that you don't want to do, you know, think about like bison, for example. Bison were almost extinct, and they've had this great comeback. And now the reason for that is we started eating them.
Yeah.
So the strange as it sounds, the best way to save a species is to eat them. So some people might think, you know, methane, cows, like we need less cows or whatever. But, you know, we have, you know, when a cow is born, you know, its choices are very limited to how it's going to die. Let's think the wild, for example. It's going to be predated. It's going to die from old age, which is probably going to be predated then. Or it's going to be starved. Because it can't get food. So these are terrible, you know, predation's a terrible way to die. Starvation's a terrible way to die. We have animals that are in the best life, primal life. We only use certain farms. They're pasture raised. They come in and then it's instantaneous. They're rendered unconscious and, you know, at the very peak of their life. And then they're used to go into an incredible food system. So, yeah, we've been very, very well received for the most part. And it's remarkable how many people say, you know, I'm vegan and I've just watched this whole video on you butchering a cow.
Yeah, that's cool. We always say
you mentioned if a group came to us and got confrontational at our business, obviously it probably wouldn't go well because we have something there to defend. But till now, we've had no issues.
Yeah, no, that's cool. We always say that the animal has one bad day, but a lot of great days.
That's it. Yeah, that's exactly right.
You know, and butchering is kind of like hunting conservation too. You know, if hunters weren't out in the field, you know, taking animals, then the populations wouldn't be thriving like they are today. So very similar.
Yeah. Is there a type of animal that you like to butcher more than another?
Well, I can't say I like to butcher them because they're so difficult to work with, but the American bison, that's what our family started with.
Okay.
Incredible animal, the only bovine native to our continent. So you have European, you know, beef, those are imported from European in the same family, bovine. So bison and beef are in the same bovine family. Okay. Sometimes people lump them together with elk, but elk are more closely related to horses than they are bison. Wow. So we're talking about the native beef to this continent. That's the American buffalo, or American bison. They're such an awesome animal. They have a lot of, you know, if you think like just to be around them, it's really odd. They have a sweet odor, even like when they're out in the field. And then when you butcher them, the meat is very sweet. It's very sweet. And so my favorite animal to work with is bison, and probably the second one is probably elk.
Okay.
Those two species. Now, beef is obviously a staple, and pork, those two, but bison is my favorite.
A lot of that has to do with the fact that we've raised them.
Yeah.
Yes, you know, so we're pretty, you know, biased to the animals we grew up around.
Yeah, because I bet you if you ask a butcher here in the Northeast that doesn't have much experience with bison, they'd say, I'll stick with the cows.
Yeah, give me an Angus steer fed out to, you know, 1,300 pounds. Yeah, absolutely.
Or in our area, we have a lot of dairy, so there's a lot of dairy crosses that are coming in now.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. That's, well, we, before our father got into raising bison, we actually did dairy. So
okay.
We're very familiar with being on a dairy farm and milking cows too.
Yeah. Hey, it's hard. It's hard work. You know, I think everybody should work on a farm for a period of time. Yeah. I also think they should work in a restaurant. And if you do those two things in your life, you'll probably end up having a greater appreciation for more things, and you'll learn how to work.
Absolutely. Yeah. It gives you a lot of tenacity and drive and, you know, determination and, you know, the desire to win, I guess.
Yeah, no, totally. Yeah. Well, I have one more question for you guys. I call this the Becoming a Champion show. Again, I come from sports, but I always feel like we're all working to become our best self, our champion self. What does the word champion mean to the Bearded Butchers?
I would say it'd have to be my father, or our father, somebody that truly, you know, overcomes adversity. I think that a lot of, whether it's our sports figures or our entrepreneurs, maybe people that we look up to, or perhaps the people look up to us, it really comes down to your passion, your hard work. I know that's such a cliche thing to say, but, you know, a lot of that can trump talent. And, and even in the sports world, I'm sure you see it where, you know, the guy that shows up earliest and works the hardest. So I think that we were taught to be disciplined and to embrace hard work at an early age. And, you know, that is a quality that once instilled, if that's instilled in someone, they're going to become a champion in their field, no matter what it is. And if you do that and you bring that value, whether you're bringing it to an employer, whether you're bringing it to a sports team, whether you're bringing it to, you know, your own business, if you bring that value to them through your passion, your hard work, I think that'll make you a champion.
Yeah. Well, I think too, you guys are you're champions of industry too, right? You're a part of what was a dying industry, and are a part of the resurrection.
Sure.
Of that industry and creating a lot of awareness for people and showing too how here's this niche where you don't need to go to, you know, get a doctorate degree in butchery, and you can turn it into a real enterprise by following something you're passionate Absolutely. About.
And it's very rewarding too, because you know you're putting food on family tables.
Yeah. Your food, you're almost sitting at the table with so many people.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. You know, so this was great. I really appreciate you guys spending the time. Like I said, I'll continue to watch what you do. I appreciate the art of butchery and what you bring to the industry.